Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. All right, we're back after a week off. Last week, we were all here, but Lunar got here late, which is our diamond, our DC and Image. Just was kind of crazy. This is maybe going to happen a little more lately. The shipments getting late. We have multiple distributors. Stuff comes in late. Sometimes we just don't have time.
So hopefully none of you will notice. Only we
they'll notice by it. Well, they'll notice the lack of podcast.
And they might notice me looking a little more haggard.
And
manic.
But here's how we make it up to them. Yeah. We make this podcast twice as good the others.
This is probably going to be a double-sized podcast. We're going to talk about a lot of comics.
No, not just double length. We have to be twice as on.
Oh. You've already failed.
Y'all prepared, right?
No.
Uh-oh.
I want to call it giant-sized. Can we do giant-sized?
It's going to be giant-sized.
Yeah.
But it may be like those giant-sized annuals where it's like...
Not actually that
not
good.
Not actually great, but there's a lot of it.
Where all annuals actually suck?
Yes.
Yep. The only exception is, what, Avengers Annual 10?
Number 10, yes.
Yes.
I think there's
also
X-Men annuals.
Nope.
The Avengers annuals where they played baseball.
According to you, yes.
And and the X-Men annuals where they go to Asgard.
Those are good.
Yeah, but those... I thought that was... Well, that was an annual in the New Mutants had a special. Yeah.
I see you trying to find them. No, there are exceptions.
So lawyer my way out of this.
So is that the thing? All annuals are bad, but specials are good?
No.
No. Most any double-sized issue is bad.
Yeah, most anything outside the usual publishing is a trick. It's a trick.
That we have to strain to find them is the big indicator.
But the trouble is, the reason you got to keep buying them is you never know when the great one's going to hit. Yeah. There's a great Captain America annual, which was Captain America, Wolverine, Mike Zeck on art, Mark Grunwald writing. It's a fantastic cover.
It's not the one that has the famous cover, is it? With Wolverine's claws shearing off of Cap's.
Great annual.
Well, I also just remembered there's two, back in the day, there were two good X-Men, Uncanny X-Men stories with Dracula.
Yep.
Both drawn by Bill Sienkiewicz. One was a regular issue, and I believe one was an annual.
That's correct.
So... yes, I'll allow it. There are exceptions, but so few.
As a general rule.
That I feel like I could count them on two hands, and that's spanning, like, decades.
Anyway, fortunately, there are no annuals we're trying to sell this week, because we've just undercut the entire thing.
You know what? They'll respect our honesty, Randy.
Oh, will they?
That we're not trying to bullshit the consumer.
That's good. We would never.
Yeah.
All right. Let's start by talking about the giant amount of games that have come in.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys know, but Christmas is coming in a few months.
Yep.
And they're already prepping for it. They're sending us so many games.
So let's run down the 30-plus games that we got.
Before we do that,
I would like
to mention a special event thing that we've been doing that we wanted to cast a spotlight on.
Sure,
We had our first graphic novel club at the Cellus Brewery.
Yep.
We're only a couple of people there, but it was a lot of fun to do, and hopefully more people will come out. October 16th is the next one. It's a Wednesday. It's always the third Wednesday of the month. You can come out. You get a $5 Cellus White, but you can get other stuff there, too.
Uh-huh.
And it's a neat little space down on Metric, and we'll talk about graphic novels. Mm-hmm. Since it's October, we're doing spooky graphic novels.
You usually provide a trio of options, or a few options,
yes,
so that people can pick their favorite. You'll have read them all.
In fact, a trio of options. I will have read them all. So the spooky graphic novels I picked is The Me You Love in the Dark,
yep.
Something is Killing the Children, no, Nice House by the Lake, Nice House on the Lake.
Nice House on the Lake.
And what was the other one? It's another big, Beneath the Trees Where No One Sees.
Right. All the longest titles.
All longest titles.
Randy, you said The Me You Love in the Dark very quickly, and if people don't know that title, it sounded a lot like The Meat You Love in the Dark.
It could be, The Meat You Love in the Dark.
I mean, new from Stepan Sedgwick.
Yes. Anyway, these are a haunted house book, not really haunted house book, and a book about a serial killing bear.
Yep.
Yeah, the other one is a kind of an apocalyptic one.
Yeah. But anyway, so those are the selections. We'll have more copies of those coming in this week.
Those are all good selections.
Yep.
Yeah.
Picking it, you can read one, two, or all three.
I dare you to read all three.
I'm going to give the particular vote as the most, I think, crowd-pleaseringest one to Beneath the Trees.
Yep.
Although maybe my personal favorite would be The Me You Love in the Dark.
The Me You Love in the Dark.
The Meat You Love in the Dark. Oh, yeah.
Is this half of
the... It's also super good.
Is it just the first volume?
Just the first volume. You can, if you want, read the whole thing, and I would recommend it. But it is a rule, three graphic novels.
There's a lot of material in that first volume. A lot of material.
Yep, fair. And then worth shouting out also that we are doing... Salisbury also is doing Magic Nights, I believe, on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
They said that they've had a big increase on that. If you go to Magic, you can actually win Owlbear coins to spend here at the store.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And prize support. Over at Third Level Brewing, up here around Rock, they are running D&D Magic and Lorcana Nights.
Yep.
So, yeah, if you're... We don't have room for events these days, but if you want to do some of those events, we are sponsoring some.
Cool.
All right. Let's talk about games.
All right.
I'm going to go in reverse order of what we got. The most recent.
Okay.
We got Marvel Champions Nightcrawler.
Yep.
These are those little character packs. They come with a character that you can play out of the box, as well as a... they have an adversary that goes in the mix. His adversary is Azazel, his dumb dad that Chuck Austin created.
Well, he's no longer his dad.
Despite his lameness, Champions is a good game, and they always do a good job with these
packs.
Yeah,
they do.
And Nightcrawler is the best.
He is.
He's in the top 5 X-Men.
I would agree.
Nick, you're suspiciously quiet.
He's in my top 10. He's probably not my top 5.
You would put Banshee above him?
Hell yes, I would.
Oh, my God.
Nope.
Readers, please write in with an email titled, Nick is wrong about Banshee. And tell us why Nick is wrong.
We got a game called Tree Society, which is about contributing to the growth of a hidden society inside a forest.
Ooh.
This is so new, it doesn't even have BGG rankings yet.
Wow.
Yeah. There is a sort of hidden role type game, a co-op hidden role called Infiltrators. That's traitors as in traitorous people.
Yep, like the stormtrooper guy went, traitor!
Yep.
Traitor.
This is you're cooperatively pinpointing the enemy agents lurking in the deck. So it's a deduction game with 20 missions.
Okay, that sounds fun.
It's kind of interesting. We got a couple Shadowrun books, Shadowrun RPG, one of which I want to call out the name of it is Smooth Operations, which I assume means it has stats for Sharday.
If it doesn't, it's missing out.
There was a bunch of RPGs. I didn't even call them all out, but like there's a My Little Pony game. There's a
BattleTech.
BattleTech had some. Yeah, there's all kinds of RPG sources.
Pathfinder probably put out some adventures. I think they did.
We got a DC Super Skill Pinball Harley Quinn.
What?
So these are roll and write games. I've played these.
Okay.
It simulates a pinball game.
Okay.
And you're all rolling dice and you're doing your little flippers and that kind of thing. But the little dry erase boards are different pinball games. And this has four different DC themes. There's like Harley Quinn, Joker, Poison Ivy. It is a lot of fun. I'm not a huge pinball guy.
Yeah.
But they're a lot of fun.
I get the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I remember you talking about these before and that sounded pretty cool. And the roll and write format seems like a fun one to connect to it.
There is a Creepshow game. You take on the role of creeps and send villains their well-deserved dooms.
Oh, that's fun.
It's a competitive story-building game.
Oh, I like that.
It's kind of a fun idea.
I want to find the grim irony as I send the newspaper man to be crushed in the presses of the thing because of all the tabloidy stories he ran.
Yes.
Let's play this game right now.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a thing you can do in it, but I bet it's that kind of thing.
It probably is, yes. It says it has branching paths where you choose how the story goes and make a guess at how much suspense the villain has accumulated.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, sounds fun.
That's pretty good.
We've got Cascadia Rolling Rivers and Rolling Hills. These are two standalone roll and write games. From the Cascadia is a board game that's been very popular that is a like nature, animals, and wilderness kind of game.
So they call them flip and roll and write. Is there a difference between
flip
just
and write? Flip and write usually means that they have like cards and stuff on them as
okay.
Not just dice.
So it's a variant of
a variant of. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
We got Cafe Barris, where you are your capybaras running a cafe.
Yep, you're trying
cafe
to be
Barris. Yep. Yes. Like capybaras, but cafe Barris.
Yes,
but they're basically capybaras running rival coffee joints, and they're trying to be the best.
Yep.
They seem so chill, it's hard for me to imagine them even being that competitive. But
they're cutthroat amongst each other.
Among themselves. I will kill that other capybara.
We got a game called Zoomies, where you score big by matching domino-style dog tiles and claiming different scoring options. This looks like an all-ages for the people who like Castle Panic.
Okay.
It's very cute. It looks like a very cute game.
Yes.
And I like the dog-themed game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We got the new expansion for Dominion, the original deck builder game called Rising Sun.
Yep.
I assume it is, like, Japanese themed? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, from the cover, it definitely has, like, a temple and all that. Yeah, it definitely is.
Okay.
We got the Robo Rally 30th Anniversary Edition. Y'all played Robo Rally? No Robo Rally at all?
I know of it. I've never played
it. I know it is like a programmer-style game. Like, you set up sort of command lines, I think, for the robots.
Yep. And then you set them loose.
And then you set them loose, and it's like each turn it's like, you know, X number go off or whatever, and I'm sure the robots, like, bump into each other, and you're like, oh, shit, I forgot to tell him to smack a dude.
Yep.
And, But that actually sounds fun to me, and I am not a programmer type person.
But I'm not either, but I played it and it's super fun.
I feel like I might like this game, and it's been around for a goodly while. When I first started working at Dragon's Lair, it was a popular game, and it has stood the test of time.
It says this is the deluxe upgrade 30th anniversary edition. I know it's like double the size.
It's probably got super cool components.
It's deluxe.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know what specifics they've added.
We got a game that is a deduction game called The Search for UAPs. Is this, Dave, you might know, is this the official new term for UFOs?
They're
UAPs
is.
Now?
Yes. You say UFOs, they're going to be like, oh, that's interesting, granddad.
What is a UAP? It's in here somewhere. Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena.
That sucks.
UFOs is cooler.
UFOs is cooler. Yeah. Just stick to UFOs, you dumbasses.
Yeah.
But the game is probably good. I don't know.
Oh, the big thing about the Robo Rally is it comes with miniatures, like fully painted.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
That is cool.
So, yeah, in this you use your telescope, camera, and computer research to track down UFOs.
Yeah, that's right. We're taking it back.
We've got the newest boosters from D&D, the Vecna Eve of Ruin.
Yep.
So that ties into that adventure path.
And the larger, like, big, it's like a wolf demon.
Wolf spider?
Oh, yeah. Thing. Nice. Little, it's a little freaky, cool. Deaky thing, yeah.
The newest magic set, Duskborn, which is horror themed. And it looks very cool
and
spooky.
Dave was telling me that it is basically a universe that is a mega haunted house.
It'd be like a continent-spanning haunted house.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I want to look into it and, I don't know, run a game in it or something. I'm talking about a role-playing game. I'm not going to play their dumb magic game, but I'm sure it's good for people
who like that. Do we still have all of the commander decks?
I believe we have all the commander decks currently.
Probably won't
last very long, but we do still have them.
Cool.
They're the new character sheets for D&D, the 2024 edition.
Yep. Really cool new artwork for the cover and stuff.
We got Star Realms Academy, which is the all-ages version of the Star Realms game that I know Dave and I are big fans of.
The single greatest deck-building game of all time.
A lot of the art on those, they've kind of like cheapified them a little bit.
It looks
great.
Yeah, who was it I was talking with the other day? One of our customers about how they took the blobs, which are like actually pretty disturbing looking shapeshifters. It looks like John Carpenter's The Thing in the original game.
Yeah.
And they made him kind of big, growly monster green men. And
wasn't there like a mothership or something?
Yeah. They're all like organic tech weirdos. But they look kind of adorable in this. But still feisty.
We've got the Raven RPG, which looks very spooky, Edgar Allan Poe-ish looking.
Oh, yeah. That is literally based... It's like Edgar Allan Poe's ethos and thematics. It's literally Edgar Allan Poe's world.
Pick that one up.
Yeah, I actually might pick that up, if only for the lore, because I believe it's like, if you took like all of his stories and that was the world you lived in, a little bit like the Mega Mansion of Doom the Duskmorn. I believe it is something like that, and that sounds fun.
That does sound fun.
Will I play a sickly Victorian child with visions of death, or a sickly adult Victorian child?
Sickly Victorian adults?
Yes.
Hidden bodies under the floorboards?
Yeah. Will there be hidden bodies under the floorboards, or hidden bodies in the cask of Amontillado wall?
I am a third level Victorian adult. And my feet is coughing.
I, of course, have the blood fever. And
I'm being tormented by a raven.
That's right. The raven is the big boss. You're not going to be able to beat him until you're level 10 at least.
He's got DR5/goth.
It's mostly the, what's the biting wit or cutting wit in D&D?
Yeah, cutting words? No. Cutting words is one of them, but they're...
I can't quite say it, but that's what the raven does.
Yes.
He snarks at you.
Comes and he snarks at you.
And it's harsh. He says
and
some
he's
things.
Like, he's like, you know what? You lost your love. Your love, Lenore. What do you think about that, biatch?
He's like, you know, I've got a guest staying at my nest right now. Guess what her name is?
It's Lenore.
You're never going to guess. Yeah, you got it. You did get it. I got to go. You know who's waiting? Yeah, Lenore. You got it. The raven will take your girl. That's the thing.
Raven on his way to steal your girl.
So we got the base game, and we also got another book in that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I actually do want to look at this. Like, it legit sounds like a cool RPG setting.
Yeah. We've got the charcuterie board game. I actually have this. This is a...
Which one is this?
You know charcuterie. It's the meat and cheese plate.
Yes, but so I couldn't tell. Is there a pun in this one?
No, it's actually a set building game where you build charcuterie plates.
Oh, cool. So like the sort of thing like Sushi Go stuff
exactly.
Like that.
Yeah, exactly. There's challenges like... There's I think 3 or 4 different challenge cards for each category, which includes like meat, veggies, fruit, cheese. And it's like, get 5 different cheeses and you get this many points. And get all the different dips and you get this many points, that kind of thing. So it's a fun little game. And it goes up 6 players. Really quick play. This is a good in-between party game.
Yeah,
like, it's
yeah.
not quite a party game, but like you'll be able to get people who don't play games to play this game with you.
Right, what if we had a charcuterie board in every time we did a podcast?
Interesting.
The store's got some extra funds, I think.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, we don't, expensive. But like, what if we did?
Sure, yeah.
Just to keep it on the docket.
It's a good thought.
On the docket.
We got an RPG called Not the End. Did either of y'all look at this? You know the deal with
Not
this?
Not the End. I don't remember this one.
It looks very cool.
I was going to say, the artwork on the covers of the 2 books that we got looked really interesting.
So it is from Mana Project Studio, and it says it tells the adventures of heroes who are... willing to risk everything for what they consider important and does so with an original system called Hexis.
Okay.
So each hero is described by keywords placed in a hive of hexagons, each one has distinctive traits. The proximity of the hexagons within the hive creates relationships and bonds that makes each hero absolutely unique. It's an Italian game.
That sounds like an Italian system.
Yeah, it sounds very...
Just in that it's different.
It sounds very weird.
But I'm interested to look at it.
Yeah. We've got the Clank Catacombs, Layers, and Lost Chambers expansion. Clank, I have friends who would love this board game. It is a deck builder, dungeon exploration game.
Yep.
The Catacombs is a new standalone version of it where you have like tile base. So instead of having a board, you're building the dungeon every time.
Uh-huh.
And this adds more tiles and more traps and that kind of stuff.
Clank's on my to-do list.
It's great. It's really fun. We got the Escape from New York board game.
Yep.
We got the Avatar Aang's Destiny deck building game.
Uh-huh.
That's Avatar Last Airbender.
Those are some pretty good licenses.
And we got a game called Nunatak Temple of Ice.
Ah, Nunatak, the Temple of Ice.
Well, Dave, I thought it might...
this is like Inuit-esque, Inuit themed.
It is a 3-dimensional construction game.
Oh,
you are carving a pyramid from ice.
I remember seeing the back of this, and the components looked really nice. They looked very cool.
I love a good 3D building game.
Yeah.
I was looking at it. Oh, it's got fancy little color cubes that you stack on top of each other. It's very cool looking.
So I had to look at the Escape from New York game because I'm like, it's a licensed game. Is it good?
Yeah.
But it seems like it's a cooperative board game.
Okay.
And it's created by Kevin Wilson, who did work for Fantasy Flight and came up with like Arkham Horror, Descent, and Android.
I think he was in Wilson Phillips too.
Yeah, that too. I don't know. I love Escape from New York, the movie. How it translates to a board game. I don't know, but a cooperative Escape from New York game sounds really interesting.
I mean, they were not exactly like the best team, but Cabby, Brain, and so on were a sort of team, a loose team inside there.
Maggie,
yep. You got to defeat the Duke of New York and get the president out.
Yeah, for sure.
It sounds fun.
And then still risk World War by unspooling the tape.
Yes, that. All right.
Wait.
Yeah?
There's one more.
Oh, is there?
I don't know if this was just new to us or if we... But we didn't have it in the upfront, I think. That Clock Tower game.
Oh, yeah. What is a Clock Tower?
This is a very elaborate deduction game. And the reason I bring it up is because I watched it had a quote on the back from Shut Up and Sit Down, game review guys I like to watch. And the quote was like, this may be my favorite game of all time, something to that effect.
People love this game.
And so I went and I watched their review, and I thought as I watched it, I don't think it's for me, but it was super fascinating to look at. So, like, everybody has a bunch of different roles, just like they do in those werewolf games and things like that. And I believe it's more about there's, like, a demon loose in the village. But there's so many different roles, and their little quirks and stuff are all different that apparently a real sort of story seems to unfold. There's a person who acts as kind of narrator, kind of guiding through it and almost increasing the drama by revealing, oh, this person has a power to reveal a secret, and you're like the intermediary, and you'll like the narrator will help facilitate all of those things. And so he's kind of constantly in motion, moving around between people, and it's one of those, like, you know, from 5 to 20 people can play or something. Anyway, I if nothing else, I highly recommend watching the Shut Up and Sit Down review of, what is it called, Clock Tower?
Blood on the Clock Tower.
Blood on the Clock Tower.
It's a very heavy game.
Because, yeah, it is a heavy and very beautifully packaged game. And it's just, it's fascinating. It's one of these games, kind of like, I also really like their review of the difficult-to-describe original Dune game, the one from the 80s, the asymmetrical game. when you watch it, if it's for you, you're going to know for sure.
Also, just watch a bunch of the Shut Up and Sit Down reviews. They're really
good.
Nick and Randy, you should both watch this one we can talk about it.
I watched the Sherlock Holmes one, and that was a good time.
Yeah, he talked about like how much fun he had like playing it with his girlfriend and stuff. All right, there we go. I had to sneak that one.
All right, let's talk comics.
All right.
We were not around last week, so we had a relatively big week of comics last week, and we got a huge week of comics this week. Lots of graphic novels.
Yep.
We're not going to mention all of them.
Are we going to do last
some.
Week's or are we going to do this week's?
Let's do last week's first.
Okay.
We'll start with last week's. So, all right. The X-Men launch continues with the Dazzler book.
Yep.
I think we all like this. This is fun.
Yeah.
It's a fun premise. It's basically Dazzler on the road.
It is what it promised to be. It's actually like a touring Dazzler with some of her mutant pals as like the crew.
Yeah, strong guy and... Jamie Madrox is like the perfect roadie. Makes a lot of sense.
Basically, the roadie.
The roadie. Yeah.
However many you need.
Wasn't that guy like a cool detective and stuff like that?
Yes.
He is pretty. Yeah. Cool
actually,
detective.
He seems like the kind of guy who might be like, "Hey, I gotta clear my head. I'm gonna go do this roadie thing for a while."
Or maybe he just sent a bunch of his. Maybe his original guy stole detective, and he's just like a bunch of his roadies.
And Domino is her
security. Domino is head of security, which I liked a lot.
And is it Wind Dancer?
I didn't recognize one of them.
Is kind of her agent or...
Okay.
But also she's got Shark Girl on drums.
Yep.
Is that a person I should know?
She's a Shark Girl.
I mean, that is sort of the thematic. There's something about that in the first one. It's not literally just all concert stuff. There's anti-mutant sentiment and there's threats and there's interesting things. How I always have a fondness for Dazzler as it happened to be... An early Dazzler comic I got was one that had a bunch of Marvel Universe heroes in it, and kind of was my gateway to the MC.
I mean, it was
MC,
a good issue.
The Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually a good issue, too.
This also is, like, the themes of, like, whether or not to play down her mutant thing or to be a mutant advocate, and that's sort of the push-pull of the whole thing.
Right. The way we would look at it in kind of a... In our context, is she is passing as human.
Yeah.
You know, she's one of the pretty ones, kind of. She doesn't have that, the issue of being known from mutant. But she is also, like, that's in a crowd, but people do know Dazzler's a mutant.
Yep. They brought that up in Exceptional X-Men, too. Kitty was the one.
Yeah, they're actually doing some good thematics. It's like...
They are.
The mutant metaphor has to be updated. Grant Morrison was doing it back in 2000s where there was there's people trying to exploit them. You know, there's like trendy mutant things.
Yeah.
And humans who want in on the trendiness but still hate mutants. And so every generation kind of finds its own thing, and I think they're doing a good job with it.
So it wouldn't be me if I didn't put a bit of a complaint. I really like this issue.
But
oh, yes. One of my pet peeves in comics... is people who write, they think they should write original songs and have them in comics. I understand she's Dazzler. I understand. There's a whole song at the end of this. The writer is talking about, like, he's like, yeah, I listened to a bunch of Taylor Swift and Dua Lipa, and I really think I got a good song here. And I'm like, it's not a good song. Just let us imagine that the song is, whatever your made-up song is going to sound like doggerel and ridiculousness. Don't do music.
Well, it's not like they recorded it and like you can download it or anything.
That would be worse. That's true.
It's just
throughout, Nick. It's throughout this book.
It's funny because we were going to just blaze through the last week's, but I have something to say on this.
Okay, all right.
There is a recorded one that were pretty good. The Black Canary trio of songs that they put out for DC years ago when she was a singer were actually pretty good. They're like, they're legit. I'll send them to you.
Okay, all right.
But I do kind of agree with you though, Randy, that like, Strangers in Paradise and others have done
yes,
it.
Yeah.
And usually it feels like, well, you're kind of doing your wannabe poet thing,
yep.
but music, the music is part of these songs, and just reading them without that kind of seems hokey. But I also, there's a part of me that kind of likes it, but I would rather hear, like, snippets.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
just little bits.
It is clear to me that the writer fell in love with this song and had to have the whole thing in there.
Yeah.
And I feel like you're a writer, this write is, comics.
Give me a QR code where I can listen to it.
Yeah, give me
maybe.
A QR code where I can't not, cannot listen to it.
There was something about this writer. I know this is their, like, what were
they? Jason Liu?
They had done something prior to this, or maybe they worked in television.
Well, he said, yeah, I think that's right. So he wanted to write... He wrote Lila Cheney for X-Men Unlimited Infinity, which is one of the online series.
So he's another he's a song guy.
He's a song guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know where he comes from. He also did he made up the opening theme song for Spider-Friend and Marvel Voices Spider-Verse. So this is the thing he's gonna do, and therefore I must destroy him.
It's good
maybe
to have.
Just,
it's good to have a foe.
Music.
I don't care.
It's good to have a foe.
I just cared about the.
I actually am kind of interested to hear other people weigh in on this. So if you have thoughts, send it to us as
right.
well as your complaints about Nick.
And remember,
what did I?
And remember that if you like music in comics, you are history's worst monster.
Or you're just an adversary of Randy.
Randy's
yes.
made a good. All right, now let's blaze through the rest of these.
All right.
See, so I did a tie-in to the next one.
Yeah, Spirits of Vengeance. This is if you know the Ghost Rider, there is there was an edgier Ghost Rider called Vengeance. This brings him back along with some of the other Ghost Rider types.
Someone's hunting all
Somebody's
the Ghost
hunting
Riders.
Ghost Riders. And yeah, so they're back.
It's spirits plural of Vengeance.
Deathlok has a 50th anniversary one-shot. Deathlok, if you don't know, is a cyborg from the future. He's had multiple different incarnations. And
he's like
has,
an anti-hero type guy.
Yeah.
I always get them all confused, honestly.
Well,
he's not
one,
Death's Head.
The one from the 70s.
The only one I know is the one Dwight McDuffie wrote.
Yeah, and that was the one from the 90s, and he's sort of a slightly different version.
Yeah, I like that one.
But he was a pacifist in a killer cyborg body.
I had a cool Deathlok toy from the original Marvel Legends that I adored as a child.
He's got a great look.
He was one of the earliest cool-looking kind of anti-heroes. You know, like, right around the time when The Punisher was coming out, Deathlok was like, I'm the scary robot from the future.
Yep, yep. We've got TMNT Mutant Nation. This is the third in the TMNT relaunch series. There's the regular TMNT.
Yep.
There's the Night Watcher. This is sort of around the Mutant Nation. It's got a Casey Jones story and also a story of, Raphael?
And his pet Stegosaurus.
Yep. Sure.
I kind of like this one.
Yeah,
they were both pretty good stories, and they each there's two stories, and each one will continue into the next issue.
Yeah.
So it's going to be filling out the sort of world setting, and it's like I said, pretty good.
We got some Batman Day reprints. Actually, I guess I'll do this first. We've got two Image books. The Moon is Following Us. This is Daniel Warren Johnson and Riley Rossmo. Nick, you read this one?
Yeah, it's sort of a. I don't want to compare it to, like, Ready Player One, but there is sort of a VR environment and element to the story as parents are sort of trying to do something for their child. It's an interesting story, I think, executed well, and Rosmo's artwork is just kind of just so adventurous and fun.
I like Riley
really
Rossmo.
I really dug it. He got to do a lot of just kind of bizarre fantasy techno... stuff in this, and I thought he did a great job.
And then, did anyone read the Tin Can Society?
No, this is Remender's.
This is from Giant Generator, which is Rick Remender's sort of imprint. So he's.
I made a sign, so I know the premise.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
The premise is that there's a guy who is a Tony Stark-like armored hero,
mm-hmm.
but he very specifically, I think he has like some sort of physical disability. And so the suit was meant to compensate for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he also was using his tech to help other people who were disabled. And he ends up getting killed somehow, I think.
Okay.
So it is actually not his story, but the story of his friends who I think are investigating the mystery of his death. But I believe it deals, you know, with concepts like ableism and stuff like that.
Okay.
Maybe as they might intersect with superheroes. Just knowing Remender, I'm sure he's kind of doing something different with it. And he is like... It's his line, but he doesn't like write it. But you can expect it to probably have a little something in common with his books. So if you are one of the many people who like Remender's stuff, it might be worth checking out. What is it? The Tin Can Society. Yep.
All right. Closing out last week, we have a couple of things. It was Batman Day on Saturday. I don't know if you know that.
It was.
We still have a few free Batman comics, but these were two you could purchase. So reprint of Batman Elmer Fudd, the Eisner winning.
Yep.
Batman Elmer Fudd by Tom King and Lee Weeks. Now, y'all know how much I love Tom King.
But we kind of liked it when it came out.
I really enjoyed this, and it is a fun one shot. It's got spectacular artwork.
Yeah, Lee Weeks is.
It's just it's a noir take on Elmer Fudd, which sounds ridiculous, but it works.
Yeah. It was the ambition sort of made it work.
And bridging between last week and this week, last week they reprinted Batman: The Last Halloween, the prologue. This was supposed to be the third in the trilogy of Long Halloween, Dark Victory, Last Halloween. Yep. By Loeb and Sale, and then Sale passed away. Tim Sale passed away.
Yes.
And so they're going to do this miniseries with a variety of super talented artists.
It's a who's who of great art.
But the prologue is actually Tim Sale art. It's maybe the last Tim Sale art.
Yeah.
And it's spectacular.
I read and enjoyed this.
It's an epilogue that's sort of both epilogue and prologue. It's wrapping up some events, but it sets up some things with, like, Two-Face and his wife, who I have not read Long Halloween in a while, but I know she played heavily into the mystery, and there's big stuff with her and some of the other players from Long Halloween, like Solomon Grundy in there. I want to say there's... I can't remember if they set up a little bit. It's Calendar Man. Some of the big players from it.
Yep.
And I enjoyed it quite a bit. It is honestly some great artwork from Tim Sale. It's sad to see him go, but this artwork is so good. So I think anybody who's getting the new series should pick up the Prelude if you don't already have it.
Agreed.
And there's an afterword. There's like an interview with Loeb about how this came about, and you know, saying lots of nice things about Sale, of course. But it's actually informative and interesting. And so, shall we lead that right into this week's?
This week is the beginning of Batman: The Last Halloween. The first artist on board is Eduardo Rizzo, colors by Dave Stewart, and it's gorgeous. It's really really nice.
Rizzo, like that opening double page splash, is just amazing.
So this is all sort of takes place in the same sort of year two, year three that Long Halloween and Dark Victory did.
The holiday killings or the Long Halloween killings are over, but there's a kind of a legacy of them and a fear as Halloween hits of some sort of a copycat.
Yep. So one of the Falcone crime family is like starting up again. You got Catwoman, you got Robin, you got Harvey Dent and his wife. Yep. A cop who I didn't know... what's her name? Detective Lopez? I think she'll be an original character.
Yep.
And something going on with Jim Gordon and his wife and his kid. And a couple other notable Bat-villains who show up.
Interesting violent altercation between Harvey Dent and another big villain, seemingly, at the end. Although, there's enough mystery going on that I'm not quite sure it is what it looks like. But it's an intriguing first issue, and I think this one's going to be pretty big.
All right, Nick, tell me about the Lobo cancellation special. I was in here in the room as Nick is laughing his ass off reading through this thing.
Well, I'm kind of a small Lobo fan. He's enjoyable. They used him well in 52. This was really fun.
It's a one-shot, right?
It is a one-shot. Kyle Starks basically writes a Lobo that has been stranded on a... ass-backwards planet. No technology. There's no nothing.
He's like an Amish planet. It's an Amish planet. Amish aliens.
He's killed 90% of them and left one village alive and basically torments them with his stories
This is the violent Lobo of the 90s will just kill a person. He'll frag them at the drop of a hat.
Yes.
He'll frag.
He says all of the Loboisms you expect him to. Yeah. He acts the way you want him to.
There's a few ones I hadn't heard in there when I was flipping through it.
There are now Lobo facts, which I was deeply amused by.
I saw that they were very sarcastic to him.
Yes.
They're like, we wish you would finish us off. They're like, your prolonged presence and your awfulness is actually worse than death.
They basically just want to die, and he won't let them die.
They're kind of hilariously morose people.
But something happens. He has to go, he gets contracted to save a person, and it leads to more hilarity. If you're a Lobo fan, this is a no-brainer. Kyle Hotz does the artwork.
It looks as if he has wanted to draw this all his life.
I remember mostly Kyle Hotz from
The Hood. From Marvel.
But he's done stuff
Common with Kelly Jones like that. Like very uber detailed kind of macabre style. They look like they love heavy metal and Tales from the Crypt and all this stuff. And those kind of people have always been wanting to draw Lobo.
But Kyle Starks is a fun writer, and apparently I need to go read his, what is it, I Hate This Place? Just kind of a sci-fi horror. Mm-hmm. book. He wrote the Pet Avengers book that I love.
Mm-hmm. Marvel Unleashed.
Marvel Unleashed. Yeah, it was. Yeah. He wrote something else I really enjoyed, too, and I can't remember what it was. But, yeah, this one was a standout for me.
Nick recommends the double Kyles. Kyle Starks, Kyle Hotz.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can't go Kyle wrong.
We have two kind of weird crossover books this week. There is Turtles of Grayskull. This is He-Man, the Masters Universe, and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yep.
Tim Seeley, Freddie Williams, they're a good creative team.
Yeah.
Yep.
This basically utilizes everything in the Turtles universe, everything in the He-Man universe.
Yeah, you get to see Turtles in, like, the kind of armor and He-Man. They Masters of the Universe up.
Yep. Raph outright says that in this universe, I get to wear armor.
I thought Freddie Williams' designs were really good.
Yeah, they are. Yeah,
they're fun.
I mean, there's one toupee joke that was a little weird for me, but, you know.
It's because one of the turtles has, like, He-Man hair.
Yeah.
It's true. Yes, it does. It was weird. A little off-putting. I don't know. Tim Seeley, I think his love of He-Man shows here. I don't know if he's ever written anything for the Turtles.
I feel like he probably has.
Most of the crossovers we get with these kind of things are surprisingly better than you'd expect these days.
And Freddie Williams is the crossover king because he wrote the Turtles Batman series, or he drew that.
Well, Tinian actually wrote some of those, but he was drawing them. Yeah.
And then the other one is Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Usagi Yojimbo.
This is a one-shot.
Is it just a one-shot?
It's a one-shot.
Yeah. I didn't see that one. That's wild.
It's actually pretty cool. I like the artwork. It's not written by Sakai or drawn by him, but it felt kind of a piece of Usagi.
Yeah, Usagi and the Power Rangers fit together.
Yeah, they do. Basically, the Power Rangers get transported by whatever they call it, the grid, I think is their thing.
Yeah.
Transported to Usagi's world. And
basically, he's had to deal with kaiju and stuff before. Yeah, so.
And that definitely takes place in this as well, as you could imagine some Zords.
If Rita Repulsa were to team up with Lord Hijiki or one of those people.
Yep.
It was a lot of fun.
Yep. We have a new Image book called Knights vs. Samurai. This is by David Desmalchian, the guy from Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah, Late Night with the Devil.
And Ant-Man.
Oh, yep.
And it's...
Wait, he wrote those movies? He started them?
He was the star.
He was the star.
He's written a few comics.
He's a comics guy.
I feel like the title is somewhat self-explanatory.
Knights vs. Samurai. I think you know what you're getting.
The one thing that I didn't know about this was that it's kind of a heightened world setting wherein there is magic and creatures and stuff like that, and they will play a role,
too. It's a little more D&D-ish than we were expecting.
Yes.
Worth mentioning the Superman versus Wonder Woman Collector's Edition facsimile edition.
Yep.
Big, giant, oversized.
What is this reprinting? I looked through it and I didn't recognize
it. It's a 1978 special, right? Yeah, it's a 1978 special. Interestingly, though, the 1978 special, drawn by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, by the way, one of the greats of the era, is set in the 1940s. And it has to do with, you know, because Superman and Wonder Woman were both originally around there, and it imagines that them in that period. And it's the I mean, you know, on one level, it's kind of a very Bronze Age story. Almost feels like a little bit of a late Silver Age story. But it seems like Superman and Wonder Woman end up on opposite sides of questions about, like, the war and the use of, like, nuclear weapon or an atomic bomb in them.
Oh, that's interesting.
And, like, on the last page, they're talking to, like, FDR.
Who would be writing this at the time?
Jerry Conway, I
think. Is it Jerry Conway? Okay.
That was weird.
Yeah, it's an odd one, but, you know, if you have the nostalgia for the era or just want to see Jose Luis Garcia Lopez doing some pretty stunning artwork, then it's probably going to be worth checking out. It's of a piece with, I think, the Ali thing, the Superman Muhammad Ali.
I'm really a fan of this format that DC has done. Because they did this, they did that Batman, the Ra's al Ghul special.
They also did a Legion of Superheroes one, I think. Or maybe I'm thinking of the big book. But anyway, it seems like they're having fun with what they would call the Treasury size edition.
Agreed.
Yep. There's a new book from Maria Lovett called Violet Flowers. If you know Maria Lovett, you know that she usually does sexy violent stuff, and this is sexy violent stuff.
She's an incredible artist. I don't know if she's ever done anything that I thought was great, although the thing she did with Azzarello was pretty good. Her artwork is always very winning, and she delivers on the erotica usually.
Yeah.
This looks like lesbian vampires.
Cool.
All right, I'll check that out later.
We've got The Manchurian. This is a series of one-shots that Image is going to be doing called The Horizon Experiment. They're all unrelated.
I believe each one is meant to be kind of a rethink on classic genre tropes.
So this one is a Chinese James Bond
by
Pornsock Pikachu? I'm sure
it was a name that I was could not dare.
He
to
did
take on.
The Good Asian, which was a really good crime
and
series.
And Terry Dodson is doing the art, yeah. So a pretty good pedigree there.
He's formerly worked for DC's Vertigo imprint. He's a good writer. The art on this looks really good. I can't remember who the artist is.
It's Dodson.
Dodson's, yeah. A rethink on a Chinese James Bond.
Yeah.
Kind of a fun spy one-shot.
And each issue will be a different genre.
I should have put that before. Violent Flowers, I've got a trilogy of naughty books here.
Oh.
So Violent Flowers was number one.
Yep.
Then we've got Lilith from Vault, which is about a demon girl working in Hollywood. And
she's working as a model.
Yep.
And I think she, I don't know.
Eating bad people.
She what?
She's eating bad people.
Yeah, I think that's right. And so we can root for her.
Yeah.
Falls for a cute lady bookseller in this.
Yep.
That's going to fall within our naughty realms.
Got cool black, white, and red art. And then from Distillery, we've got The Missionary, written by Ryan Stegman, art by Jason Howard, who is a guy who's about to do Transformers.
Yeah, he is.
And this is about a mild-mannered grocery clerk who discovers his wife pleasuring their pastor.
Oops.
And then gets possessed by a demon, and then weird shit happens. This book's weird, y'all.
War between angels and demons.
War between angels and demons. And a mild-mannered guy.
We're nearing Halloween. There's going to be some dark horror comics.
Yeah, sure.
Yep.
When we still have one to come up with.
Yep. Let me talk about some of the trades, and then we can talk about the rest of the single issues for the week.
Sure.
There is the Berserker hardcover.
Yep.
This is just the first... Is this the main series together, or is it everything?
I believe it's the main series. Okay. So three volumes?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
And one big hardcover. I want to mention D&D Fallbacks Bound for Ruin. I talked about this previously. It's a novel.
Mm-hmm.
It was a hardcover. This is the softcover version. I've listened to the audiobook. This is really fun. I recommend it to people if you're looking for something in the vein of the D&D movie. We've got Giant Generator First Issue Sampler. This is, I think, 7 issues for $10. It is all the Rick Remender properties. So, Seven to Eternity.
Whoa.
And Low and Black Science and Deadly Class
Deadly
and all
Class.
Those. So
wait, they're all in...
One issue, the first issue of all of them in a sampler trade.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Remender Sampler, a little what you might call a Rick Reminder.
No one's calling it that.
I did.
Dave's calling it that. I'll join in.
We got the hardcover of If You Find This, I'm Already Dead. A kind of apocalyptic sci-fi book that we all kind of like.
Yep. Oh, yeah, it's oversized. It's gorgeous looking.
Yeah, it's a, what is it, an embedded reporter in kind of a near future, trapped in an alien dimension of aliens we've been at war with, but she kind of breaks loose and just finds herself trying to survive in their weird, super weird alien city.
I'm not wrong, this is Matt Ken, right?
I believe that's right, yes.
Yeah. Well, he's an interesting guy.
A new printing of Legion of Superheroes Great Darkness Saga. This is arguably the best Legion of Superheroes story ever done.
It's the Legion versus Darkseid.
Legion versus Darkseid. Really, really good stuff. If you've never read the Legion of Superheroes, it's a good sampler to jump in on.
Yep.
NYX, which the regular series is coming out, this is the original NYX, gets a gallery edition hardcover.
And an
really
art by
pretty
Joe
art.
Quesada, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Good stuff from him.
First appearance of X-23.
Yep.
And
a couple of others as well.
We got a quick and easy guide to coming out. This is the people that do the quick and easy guide to trans and identities and queer identities and that kind of stuff. This
in a
is
way,
their...
I'm surprised they haven't done it before, but they're doing like really good services here. These are all good thematics.
They're good little graphic books.
Yep.
Joker Man Who Stopped Laughing Complete Trade. This is the most recent Joker series, all in one volume.
Is it the Tinian one?
No, this is the Matt Rosenberg that followed up.
Got it.
Second volume of World Tree, the sort of spooky internet horror.
Undernet. Whatever they called it, yeah.
That James Tinian is doing, which I really enjoy.
Creepy book.
And then a long out of print, We Three.
Yes.
Which is best described as what? Homeward Bound
meets maybe the Terminator.
Yeah.
They're like sort of little cybernetic, a dog, a cat, and a rabbit that are kind of meant to ultimately become next generation battlefield kind of weapons. Like they have like wires and stuff in their neurological system, and they are a little bit heightened in their intelligence, but not super smart.
Nope.
Especially about the
rabbit. Yep.
But they escape Homeward Bound style, and they are hunted by like the military forces.
Yep.
And in some ways, it's not much more complex than that, but like it's a heart-wrenching story. A word of warning. Maybe not everybody makes it out of this.
Yep,
but
it's really good. The art by Frank Quitely is stunning.
Some of his best artwork.
Yeah.
And really many, many great scenes in it. One of my favorite things from Morrison, to be honest.
I think we would all recommend everyone pick
100%.
This up.
Yeah.
Like, it's great.
Yep.
All right. The rest of the single issues for the week. Ultimate Spider-Man number 9.
Yep.
That continues on. Saga number 69, which features the 69 cover. Which,
oh, you know, how clever. I didn't notice that. Yep. Finally. Well, they should really just make that a thematic on every issue that comic that hits the issue 69. Just go ahead and run with it. Brian Vaughn did it. You can do it, too.
We have 4 X-books this week.
It's true.
NYX number 3,
yep.
Which is a focus on Anoli, the bartender.
Yep.
X-Force number 3, which features a sort of a weird Golden Age villain.
Okay.
Phoenix number 3, which is Phoenix up against the Black Order. And Uncanny X-Men number 3, which brings in Nightcrawler to train the new characters that Gail Simone has introduced.
And if you want to count it, although it's not part of that launch,
it's X-Men adjacent.
There's Wolverine Revenge
number 2, yeah.
Number 2.
Yep. Which you can get the regular version or the red band.
Red band, in which you can see Wolverine's penis.
Promise there's just some blood.
Dave doesn't know that, but we don't know that.
Yeah, until one of us opens it. Yeah.
It's like Schrodinger's, you know.
Schrodinger's Wolverine's penis.
Okay. Boy, I have regrets about the last 30 seconds.
The Phases of the Moon Knight number 2. This is the other Moon Knight's anthology series. Notable, the backup story is like the Moon Knight of 3800. It's like a future Moon Knight.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
But the main one is by Jed MacKay, and it features Moon Knight, like Mark Spector, up against Night Raven, a British vigilante who is a pretty deep cut, but was really good. I enjoyed it.
Earlier you were saying that name, and I'm like, I have no idea who that is.
Namor
number Alan Moore worked on him.
That's
so
true.
Namor number 3, really enjoying the world building that Jason Aaron's doing with Namor.
Yep.
Frankenstein issue 2. Standstill issue 2. This is that time travel assassin book that I really like the second issue of this one. And Hello Darkness number 3, which is Boom's horror anthology that sort of goes along with the EC style. That's everything I got. What else y'all got?
Did you Predator versus Black Panther number 2? Chasm number 2, which I didn't get a chance to read.
You have to say the full name. Chasm, Curse of Kane.
Oh, Chasm, Curse of Kane. I'm sorry.
I've read it. This is kind of slightly batshit series, but I'm still continuing to like it. It has the kind of fallen Ben Reilly clone of Spider-Man, and kind of doing Bonnie and Clyde type stuff with Hallow's Eve. And trying to redeem them is Kane, the other good guy clone at this point. And there's a bunch of weird stuff going on. It has an evil Eternals guy. It has Mole Man in it. There is Vermin, the Rat Man. So there's just a lot of pieces. I'm not going to say I'm going to quite call this good, but I still continue to enjoy it. So there's something to it. And I did want to mention, if we did mention, there's a new Creepshow series.
Oh, yeah.
It's just,
man, horror anthologies are really springing back up, aren't they?
And people are turning out for them. And it's like, nobody is saying, like, oh, I got this one and it sucked. It's just like, oh, this one was good, but I like this one a little bit better. Awesome. This one is notable because of the creative team. Chip Zdarsky writes the first one, and the second one is written and drawn by James Stokoe, one of our favorite insane artists who draws super detailed.
And also, just a blast from the past, the first story is illustrated by Keegan MacLeod.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Yeah, that's quite the team supreme.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be like a 6-issue miniseries.
And then I had the 4th issue of Zatanna Bring Down the House, which I'm really enjoying, and the 2nd issue of James Tynion's and Christian Ward's Spectrograph.
Oh, yeah, okay. Spectrograph is one that I want to read because
we just got that in. We didn't get a chance to read it. But
it came a little too late in the day.
Tynion is one of the best horror writers.
Yeah, and
right
I like the first 2 issues. So
yep,
it's a weird haunted house story that also deals with a extremely negligent mother in it.
Yeah,
who has enough depth in that second issue to make me want to know where this is going.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about a bunch of trailers that we watched. All right, so we got some trailers to talk about. First, we have a bit of casting news. I don't know if you all saw this, but they cast Kyle Chandler as Hal Jordan in the Lanterns show on Max.
So, this show has been in development for quite some time.
It has.
And I know there was a past iteration that just died, I think.
Yes, that was going to be the Greg Berlanti, which probably for the best. I think probably that time is of its past. This is going to be... it's a straight-to-series order. It's from Chris Mundy, who did Ozark, Damon Lindelof, who did, among other things, Lost and Watchmen, which are both really good.
Yep. I think my sister really liked that Ozark series.
And Tom King, who I, of course, am the world's biggest fan of. So they are co-writing, executive producing. The Ozark guy is the showrunner. Nick and I both watched some of Ozark. I think I watched a season and a half. You watched some of...
I only watched a few episodes. I really couldn't get into...
It's very slow.
I like Jason Bateman. I love Laura Linney. But that just... It just couldn't catch me.
But this seems like the people... They're running... They're going to do a gritty True Detective style. Which I'm not sure it's what I want. But as Jordan is going to reluctantly mentor a younger Lantern, John Stewart. They're going to investigate an earthbound murder with larger implications.
Oh, I thought it was going to be spaceship.
No.
No, it's earthbound.
I'm wary of this. However, Kyle Chandler as an older Hal Jordan is perfect casting.
Yeah, it's really good.
Have I seen this dude in
You've seen him in the Godzilla movies. He's like the dad in the Godzilla movies.
Oh, weird. Okay.
Friday but Night he Lights, is, he was the coach.
The thing people know him from, he's the coach on Friday Night Lights.
Okay.
He is Tim Waltz.
Okay. Yeah. I know. I like the... That idea of Hal Jordan as a mentor is, I think, a better way to update that character.
Yeah.
Because they've been having trouble figuring him out in the comics for a decade or two.
I have a feeling he's going to be sort of the sour, but doesn't want to be too old for this shit mentor.
He's the reluctant mentor.
Yeah.
That sounds good. Earthbound crime.
Yeah,
man,
I'm not so sure about that either.
They got these super ass powerful rings, and he's going to just be like, are there any traces of dirt on the boots?
Yeah. There is still more space dirt on these boots.
But. That's just that is my non-charitable version of it, and I suspect in general, James Gunn and his people seem to be thinking these through. So
yep.
I will certainly give it its chance, and I just need to kind of see. I need to see like a good trailer, you know.
I'd sort of written this one off, but the casting
that sounds,
has
that sounds
back
like
in.
A good cast. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, we got some trailers. Let's talk about first Teacup. This is a horror series on Peacock.
Yep.
By James Wan?
Yep. Well, it's he's producing
produced
it.
By
he's producing,
okay. James Wan, who you may know from such movies as Saw, Insidious, and the first two Conjurings, and...
Malignant.
And Malignant. And he's produced a lot of stuff, too. So, and some of that stuff is good, and some of that stuff is crap.
That's true.
So, this one I thought looked pretty good. What is it? Rural Family?
Yeah, yep. The log line is, trapped on a farm in rural Georgia, a group of neighbors must put aside their differences and unite in the face of a mysterious and deadly threat.
So the creator listed is Ian McCulloch, who did Yellowstone.
Okay, interesting.
So that's kind of interesting.
So in the trailer, the notable thing is the family's going about their normal, slightly idyllic-looking farm life.
Yep.
And there's a guy in this, like, creepy-ass gas mask who approaches, like, at dusk or evening or something.
And he basically draws a line around, like, their...
Is that like, is it one of those things that you use to like paint lines in like
a
parking
lot?
Yeah,
it's like a paint gun kind of
thing. And he's like, they can't cross the line. And the trailer doesn't make exactly clear, like, well, do they try it and something happens? Why would they ever believe that?
There is something in there that
it seems like they do.
Sometimes
they do.
When we watch this in the darkness, I should say not in the darkness, but in the sort of brightly backlit office here.
Yeah.
It's horror movie trailers, especially, something will happen in the dark and we like can't see what happened.
But
something definitely does make them afraid, and then it seems to kind of continue from there.
The notable people in this is like Yvonne Strahovski, who was the co-lead of Chuck, and she was on Handmaid's Tale.
Is she the mom?
She's the mom.
Yep.
And Scott Speedman, who's been in
various things.
Grey's Anatomy. He was in the original The Strangers, so he's not too far from horror movies.
Okay.
A couple of other people are in it, but they're the notable ones. It looks interesting.
I thought it was a solid trailer with a different type of premise. It's interesting that like boundaries and things like that seem to be like that was also the case for this upcoming Halle Berry movie. And if you think back to like The Village, do you remember they're not like supposed to go into the forest and like if they see the color red, they were not supposed to do stuff. So, you know, those are kind of interesting tropes within horror that aren't used too often. I'm interested enough in it.
Yeah.
I want to try it.
Yeah. There is Sinners, the new movie from Ryan Coogler.
Right.
This is his, looks like Prohibition era vampires, maybe?
I couldn't quite tell.
Is it a small town community, or is it just focusing on, like, the African-American population in this, like small in this area of a bigger town?
Well, I'll tell you this, it's called Sinners.
All right, well, that's
I'm looking it up. Twin brothers return to their hometown to start their lives over when they encounter an evil presence that has been waiting to welcome them back.
Okay, town suggests a certain size at least. But yes, it does. It looks like, well, it closes. Most of it is like scary things are happening. There's things building up, and there's things in the shadows, and there's stuff like that. But in the end, one of guy, I guess,
Michael B. Jordan
is firing a Tommy gun.
Yep.
So
yep.
you know.
So the cast on this: Haley Steinfeld, Michael B. Jordan, Delroy Lindo, Omar Benson Miller. There's a lot of good people in this.
Yeah.
Ryan Coogler, as Nick says, really hasn't made a bad movie.
No, I think I've watched. I mean, I watched all the Creed movies. They're all good.
Yeah.
And there is a vibe. I think Dave, did you mention this or that it was his sort of Lovecraft country?
Yeah,
right. And really, the period piece thing of the 20s and the focus on an African American community. I don't know if it's going to, you know, like Lovecraft Country specifically wanted to go after a bunch of different tropes,
yeah.
and look at different kinds of horror stories and adventure stories and pulp stories. And I don't know that this is going to be doing it. I don't think this is that far reaching.
No, I don't think so either.
But will it have some of the commentary and stuff of that? I can't quite tell that either. It may just be a sort of more straightforward story. But solid trailer.
Yeah, this is a good trailer, and I'm definitely interested in seeing it.
Yep.
We got the trailer for Thunderbolts, the next Marvel.
This is one of the bigger ones in a while, in the sense that it has a lot of sort of big name characters in it. Although they're smaller big name characters. That's the whole point.
They're picking up on Ant-Man and Wasp, Black Widow, and I feel like, and then Cap and Winter Soldier, obviously.
Yep.
I feel like Black Widow is a very underrated Marvel movie.
Agreed.
I think it's a lot of fun.
It was immediately post-Endgame, and it was going to be compared to that, and it was really a different scale.
So let's talk about what the premise is here. I think we've been seeing, if you've been watching any of their shows and stuff lately, and some of the movies, that Julia Louis-Dreyfus, what's her character's
name? Contessa Valentina.
Is she a Contessa?
They haven't outright said Contessa, have they?
Have they not?
I thought they just called Val.
But she's like a some kind of high-ranking government black opsy type person who seems to be wrangling like the kind of the cast-offs and the damaged people to do like dark government projects, somewhat Suicide Squad-ish. And so that includes, like, who's the Captain America reject?
U.S. Agent.
Yep.
So U.S. Agent, Ghost from Wasp and Ant-Man.
Yep.
The Red Guardian and White Widow.
Yeah. Yep. Taskmaster.
Bucky, a.k.a. the Winter Soldier, Taskmaster.
Although Bucky seems to be working at odds with the rest.
You're right, you're right. I suspect that may not last the whole movie, but yes, you're right.
But there, so yeah, there are all these sort of cast-offs, these people who've been doing espionage and black ops and that kind of thing, and it seems like someone's trying to eliminate them.
And they're somehow going to form as a sort of ad hoc team, and that might stick around.
And they're throwing in another guy, a new guy,
named called Bob. Yeah,
who you right.
We would know who it is. Yeah.
Do we want to talk about who it is?
Not really.
Okay. It may be a fun surprise for some people.
Yeah, we should leave that until there's more. If you want to know, you can know.
I thought it was Bob the Hydra agent, but it was somebody else. It is one of those plot points that I think, Randy, both you and I are not, like, wild about the comic incarnation of this. But I think it's an interesting, could represent an interesting threat for characters because it's something rather beyond them.
Yes.
And I don't know what they would do to, in any way, make them a challenge to this character.
Yep.
So
the other interesting thing is that this is Thunderbolts asterisk, and we don't know what that means.
I was just, I'm enjoying the repartee between mostly Red Guardian and Yelena.
Yeah.
David Harbour is such a fun character.
Everybody
actor.
In the, like, I think Florence Pugh's Black
Widow. Oh, Florence Pugh's
amazing. She almost stole the show in the Hawkeye
I expect
show.
Her to steal this
It
one
begins
too.
With a scene of her going and knocking on the door, and it's bachelor pad, messy apartment of
what
David
does he
Harbour's
say? I will report you to DoorDash HQ.
Yeah, he's like, I said, drop it off. and then he does the quick tidy up in like 1 minute kind of thing. He's like, hold on.
Very important call.
Yeah, and she comes in. He's obviously living this sad sack life. Yep. And but like his delivery of it is all really good. And I'm looking like I saw this video from that Jason Pargan dude, the writer, and he made the interesting point about one of the things that worked so well about Game of Thrones and was not so strong in House of the Dragon was how many good characters there were as far as, like, pairings go. Mm-hmm. Like, you could put the Hound and Arya Stark together, and even if nothing was really happening, happy to spend time with them.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what this has going is that it looks like many of these pairings, I think, and just interactions between these characters will be interesting and fun and witty or sad or whatever.
And it also looks like they've updated costumes for a lot of them. I felt like Ghost had a major
Ghost had a really big girl.
Who was Ghost having that kind of cool action scene with?
With all of them. But... it's Yelena and U.S. Agent.
Yeah.
And also Taskmaster.
There's some knife play thrown in there. Yeah.
You know,
Taskmaster's costume looks pretty good.
It's much better.
I guess based on the, what was it, Hawkeye and, or no, what was the Winter Soldier, Falcon and Winter Soldier series?
Yeah.
I actually really like the guy playing U.S. Agent.
Yeah, I do too. It's Wyatt Russell.
He brings some depth to him, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he's got going on. His handful of moments in the trailer made me think, yeah, it's going
to
be good.
Yeah, yeah, I'm excited for this. I think the back-to-back of Captain America and this is going to get people who really just, like, want more Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
This all feels a little more Winter Soldier-y.
Well, I can see why the buzz when they showed this at, what, D23?
Yeah.
They showed the trailer and a little bit more, and everyone was sort of like, oh, this looks really cool.
Yeah.
I can see that now. Yeah. I'm like, oh, well, I'm more excited for this.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's talk about Mickey 17. This is Bong Joon-ho's new movie.
Right, let's quick say he is the guy who won an Oscar for the movie Parasite, but has also made Snowpiercer.
Yep.
Okja.
And there's one other big one. The Host. His kind of monster movie thing. Yep.
All are very good.
They're all
movies.
Good and interesting and sometimes great, I think.
Yep.
This one... I will say this, it's a sci-fi, kind of a slightly gonzo, almost Sam Raimi-esque vibe to it.
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen elements of this story in numerous other ones, but...
Moon is the most obvious thing.
Moon, Edge of Tomorrow, and there was something else.
I'm going to throw out Multiplicity.
And also Happy Death Day.
Yeah.
Because what this is, but I think the way he's going to be using it will be interesting because it looks like he's going to be probably doing his, capitalist critique, I imagine.
Yeah. Well, I will say that this is the first time I believe that he is adapting a novel.
An existing property.
Is not his, okay.
That is not his idea. I think he's going to basically make it bigger, but this is definitely, it's adapted from a novel. I don't remember
who's the lead.
It's Robert Pattinson.
So Robert Pattinson's some down on his luck dude who signs a contract that will allow him to become a, what do they call it?
An expendable.
In which case, I believe you kind of essentially give your body permanently to science kind of thing. And if you die doing the kind of weird, they haven't, like, he's out in space.
It looks like they're terraforming new planets and things like that.
He's doing highly dangerous work, and it clearly dies many times.
Yes.
Yep.
Well,
and
as
they, 17.
At least 17. and they, the scientist gets some little bit of tidbit of information or whatever out of all of them. He kind of has to live with it. It seems like he gets to keep... So the memories must be uploaded.
Yeah,
because he knows... he remembers his previous deaths.
Or maybe he's a completely different person. Who knows?
I thought they were indicating...
No,
that he's like...
A clone or something, yeah.
Yeah, that his cloned bodies at least remember them. And there's at least some chaos where you see multiples of the clones bumping into each other.
Also looks like Mark Ruffalo is going to have some fun.
Yeah.
Which he's been having fun in a lot of his last movies.
Yeah.
What was the Poor Things where he got to be...
He had a great time in Poor Things, yeah.
The rest of the cast, there were a couple other notable people in this.
It's a good cast.
Yes. It is. I'm interested. Again, I do feel like I've seen many of these themes before.
I just know Bong Joon-ho is going to bring something different.
I thought this was one of the better trailers we saw. I really liked this trailer.
Well, it feels like he's like pushing into a little bit of the comedic area where a lot of his other stuff definitely did not have that.
I like
that sort of kind of oddity. But
right.
Snowpiercer, there's not a lot of laughs.
But it couldn't help but remind me of, like, multiple deaths of, like, the training sequence deaths of Tom Cruise in Edge of Tomorrow.
I get that. Yeah.
This style is very different on this. Again, it's got some Raimi energy coming off of it.
Yeah, agreed.
But it's for sure going to be on my see what people are saying, give it a shot, probably.
Yeah, I will go see this one.
Yeah. All right, last is Salem's Lot. Which I thought was a show, but I guess is a new movie remake.
Yeah, it was slated for theatrical release, but then HBO decided to just put it on Max.
You know what? Every version of Salem's Lot has done that. There was a TV movie in the late 70s that had at least several memorable scenes that stuck with people.
Yeah.
There was a miniseries in, the early 2000s?
Yep.
Somehow it never seems to make it to the big screen.
It was in that era where they were adapting a lot of Kings into, like, a 12-part miniseries or something.
But this was his Kings scary take on vampires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe, I was telling Nick earlier, I think it may be the story that originated the notion that if you don't believe in the holy symbol, you're holding up against
them. I think that's right. Yeah.
It doesn't work. Yeah. And very shortly thereafter this, like within a few years, it showed up in X-Men comics and a few other places. But as far as I know, this might be the first. It's heart, Nick. We both read the book and stuff.
Yeah.
There's a guy who's a writer, and he comes back to the small town he grew up in.
Yep.
And he's able to piece together that there's some... He's writing, I think, about, like, a mysterious... The house, right?
I believe that's what it was,
and yes. There's a house with, like, a storied history. Think a little bit of shining darkness to its past. It seems like it might be sort of a nexus for bad things. And that, I think, is maybe what drew the vampire, too... Who is notable for being a really smart vampire.
He returns to his childhood home of Jerusalem's Lot in search of an inspiration for his next piece, only to discover his hometown is being preyed upon by vampires.
Yeah. I remember him being a good character, lots of other good supporting characters. There's a kind of a nerdy kid, the kind of nerdy kids that King likes to write about in a lot of his stories who ends up helping him out.
I was going to say, not like a nerdy kid, but he's a good character.
For sure. King clearly... either was or knew the kind of kids who, in the 60s, they were like the ones who put together the Universal Monsters models and model cars and stuff like that. I don't know how they're going to like quite adapt that in the present. Oh, but you know what? This is set in the 70s, though.
It's got a great cast of basically character actors, like William Sadler and Bill Camp. I saw that Alfred Woodard is in it, which I love. Right. Alfred Woodard.
Yeah.
And the guy who's playing the main guy is Lewis Pullman, who is actually playing Bob in Thunderbolts.
Oh, interesting.
He was also in the Top Gun Maverick. He's basically seeing kind of an uptick.
Okay. The trailer for it notably frames it around a kind of creepy version, a distorted version of the old 70s song from Gordon Lightfoot, Sundown.
Clever
use of it. I had not seen that one done before.
I think this is a really good trailer.
Yep.
The director has not done much. He was a writer on a lot of like the lesser Conjuring movies.
Right, we saw him on some very mid stuff. Like,
the Annabelle stuff.
One that we liked.
But he directed and wrote the Annabelle Comes Home, which is...
One of the few good ones.
One of the very few good ones of that stuff.
Yes.
So this is hitting, like, I think on the 3rd of October, so next week.
Okay.
So... I'm excited to watch it.
Me too. I recommend that people read the book too. It's super good.
But I would say I like all the iterations. Like the 70s one.
I haven't seen the 2000s one.
The 2000s one had some good stuff. It had Rob Lowe and the Ben Mears role. This is solid.
I might have to get HBO Max because I haven't had it for a while, so.
You really want to watch The Penguin, right?
I really want to watch... You know what? Everybody says The Penguin's great. I don't think anybody in this room has any interest in it, but for whatever
reason... I'm the man who presses play on things. I'm not going to press play on Penguin. I'm sorry, Colin.
It's possible I might get to it.
I like the crazy penguin of the Gotham TV show.
That's fair.
Yeah, he was fun.
I like the female penguin of the cartoon.
Also a good interaction.
And in retrospect, over the years, I've come to like more Danny DeVito's also Gonzo penguin.
Sorry, there's just too many penguins.
If a penguin isn't barfing up black tar, I don't want to talk to him.
Yeah, All right, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about some movies and TV we've been watching. All right, and what is an increasing rarity, the three of us watch the same television show.
Yes, this is unusual.
True. Yeah, and that show is even themed to the store. It is Agatha All Along, the new Marvel show.
Why is it themed to the store?
Because it's Marvel themed.
It's true.
Oh, I meant like they had a rogue or something somewhere.
No, I just mean that it's related to what we do.
Yeah, it's in our wheelhouse.
It's in our wheelhouse. I think I've mentioned numerous times I was not super excited about this, but I actually wound up liking it quite a bit.
Same here. The fact that the trailer didn't seem particularly immersive in the Marvel universe was sort of off-putting to me, but it ended up like the characters and writing and stuff just kind of won me over. It is at least two episodes in, not super immersed in the Marvel universe.
But there's a lot of magic stuff.
But there's a lot of magic stuff, and it mentions MCU stuff.
And there's a lot of Easter eggs if you look into it a little bit more.
Yeah. Are there?
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know if I know about
all the different eggs. Mages are from, like,
they're Werewolf all from by Night.
And I, like, knew one of them.
Yeah. There's one that was pretty... That would be considered a deep cut, but compared to the deep cuts they did, is practically mainstream.
And then there's some possibilities of who characters are.
Right,
and I think those are
sure.
interesting ideas as well.
So the basics of this, it starts off very much a direct sequel to WandaVision.
Yeah.
Because there is a sort of a true crime vibe or a true detective style show.
Oh, it's a straight up ripoff of Mare of Easttown.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, okay. It's Mare of Easttown. Okay. Kate Winslet's show.
At the end of WandaVision, Agatha was, like, imprisoned.
Yes.
Which, by the way, I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, she's imprisoned in her like, fake role.
Yeah.
She doesn't know who she is. So now she's in this, like, true crime show, very Mare of Easttown.
Yep.
Yeah. And then she slowly starts to realize that something weird is going on.
Yep. She's investigating a murder, and the murder will end up leading her to some answers about her entrapment, I guess I'd say.
And Aubrey Plaza's character shows up as an FBI agent.
Yep.
They have a history, but she doesn't remember what the history is.
And although this is a fictional story imposed upon her, there is truth to her interaction with Aubrey Plaza's FBI,
so
their antagonistic relationship.
I was pretty bored by the first 40 minutes of this show.
You know, I've heard that, but I actually really liked it.
This reminded me so much of what WandaVision at the start, which I know some people love, I outright hated.
Mm.
And I was like, man, if you guys are going to do a bunch of pastiche again, I'm out.
See, I think it was, I wanted to see where they were going with it, and it was done by the end of the first episode.
Yeah, they basically wanted to touch on it, remind people that was a thing, and then move on to it.
It's also like a poetic justice thing. She imprisoned Wanda that way, now Wanda did it to her, but she's out quicker. It's not like
it's a good way to remind people? Like 15 minutes.
This is also a vehicle for Catherine Hahn, and she's great.
I love Catherine Hahn. I just wanted her to play the character she's going to play. I thought that they were self-indulgent, just like WandaVision was. I know that some people don't, but that's where I came down.
Okay, well, you're wrong, but okay.
But I do want to say there were other people who felt that way about WandaVision.
Yeah.
And so if you do get in there and you're like, oh, this is just WandaVision again, it's not. Just stick with it.
Yep.
It does get to be a much more interesting story.
And by the end of it, we do kind of find out... So she finds out that she's been trapped. She doesn't have her powers,
She doesn't
right?
have her powers, and she can't steal people's powers.
Unless they use it against her,
which kind of hilariously, she's always trying to get people to do.
Well, she's not a good person.
No, she's a bad person.
She's a horrible human being.
She's a pretty bad person.
She's a bad witch.
But she's charismatic about her villainy.
Yep.
And it's fun to watch her be evil.
I'm surprised they did all the nudity and, like, the kind of lewd jokes that they did in this.
Did.
I was a little surprised.
I feel like, wasn't there, like, one very naughty joke?
Yes.
I feel like,
yeah. There's some naughty jokes.
And I was kind of shy. I was like, I'm surely they can't. Oh, I guess so.
Yeah, yeah.
And so she resolves to, I guess, form a witch's coven and go to travel to what they call the Witch's Road.
Yep.
Which is kind of this otherworldly place. It's not a physical place.
A lot of people think it's, like, made up and not, it doesn't exist.
Right. And she's all in service to getting her powers back, right?
Correct.
Yep.
She is accompanied by this kind of like a groupie for witches, is what I guess I'd say.
Yeah. There might be more to him because he basically says his name, but we don't hear
it. We don't hear it.
Oh, right.
She doesn't hear it.
When she asks him his name, he says it, and like as if it was drawn, the sound is muted, but little squiggly lines appear over his mouth.
Well, when he talks about his like backstory and everything, it gets muted, and like she turns. She's trying to figure.
She's trying
out,
to try to hear it.
Adjust the radio.
It feels like an element of maybe Wanda's spell or something that's still there.
Right. She knows that it's some kind of spell.
Yeah.
But she's working with him as she assembles her. What the second episode is primarily assembling her coven. Well, go ahead.
No, I'm like, it's the getting the band together.
Yeah.
And that stuff always works.
I'm a sucker for putting the band together stories.
Same.
And this kind of ragtag bunch of, not has-been witches, but basically lower tier witches.
She says, like, according to, like, you know, the Book of Witches or whatever, that with any within any 30-mile radius, there should be a witch who's, like, at least somewhat worth her salt.
Yeah.
And so, and by the way, she has a bit of a ticking clock because there's a group that's going to be trying to kill her.
Salem
7. You want to talk about deep cuts?
Yeah, I don't even know who that is.
Oh, yeah, they're a... That is a thing. There, if you look them up online, they're very colorful characters. They were all her like nemesis from
actually, thought no, that was from a made Salem. Up thing.
They're, okay. They're, that's a very much a Marvel Universe thing.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
And so she'll end up like finding like kind of like a. Oh, like a charlatan fortune teller. Most of these people, like, they look like one thing on the surface, and then you'll find out that, like, oh, they know stuff.
Well, they're each a part of a kind of a sect of magic.
Right, we need a green witch, we need
a potion maker
and stuff like this.
I thought that was all kind of neat, interesting.
It was. They're building up some neat lore, and...
I love that her next-door neighbor... ends up being yes. kind of a... And she's like, I don't want to ask her. She's yep. annoying me.
Who is it? Is this the one from that 70s show?
Yeah. Kitty. Deborah Jo Rupp.
Kitty, yes.
From that 70s yeah. show, yeah.
Because she says she needs a black heart.
Yes.
And her name is Mrs. Hart.
Yep.
Which, by the way, that is a very strong clue as to who we think
Aubrey Plaza
is. Because her name is Rio Vidal.
Yeah.
Which doesn't map to anything else. But if she's a gender-flipped black heart, that makes a lot of sense.
Is that name some kind of anagram? That sounds
Rio
like
Vidal,
an anagram.
It does kind of sound like one.
Does.
But I haven't parsed it out.
It could be, there's probably devil or something in there. I don't know.
Yeah, interesting.
Anyway, the other ones, by the way, Alice Wu Gulliver, played by Ali An, who is like their security major or whatever. That's from a 2016 special that I think Jed McKay did that introduced this sort of Hong Kong cop mage.
Oh, I remember that.
So she's a new character, but she's definitely a character in the Marvel Universe.
Okay.
And Patti LuPone, hilariously, is playing Lilia Calderu, who is a descendant of the first Baron of Mordo. And she is a deep cut from... she's been in recent stuff, but she showed up in 1973 in Marvel Premiere number 12.
Okay.
So these are names, but even most of us, I don't think, would know it if we weren't looking them up.
The one I did know was a race-flipped Sashir Zamata from SNL, playing Jennifer Kale.
Right, that was the one name I picked up on.
Jennifer Kale was a sorceress in Florida in the Man Thing series.
Right. Yep. That's the and I don't even know how I know that because I haven't read a ton of Man
Thing. She was in the Marvel Universe.
I would love
she
if was they in the make some reference to that.
Yeah.
I would
love if Man Thing or Rare Warband showed up.
Me too. That'd be great. Because like I love the I really something about that werewolf special was so fun.
It was great.
Whenever I've rewatched it, it's been good, and so yes, linking up to that in any way, which they've already got the thing if they want it, good form. So yeah, these witches get together. They're kind of an awkward bunch. It's hilarious. The motherly one. Who's the lady who's Kitty from 70s show?
Mrs. Hart.
Her kind of awkward momness around their group is hilarious.
Yeah.
This is one of those things where the song actually worked.
Yeah.
I thought the song was great.
The song is... There was a song in the second episode that's like... Yep. Was awesomely, by the way, done like a kind of down-tempo bluesy version for the crime episode, or the crime first episode. That song is the opening theme music of that crime show.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Did you see it was like it said based on like the... Danish show WandaVision, but it had like weird little umlauts and stuff over it. But anyway, the song actually is legit good.
It is.
And that's a nice touch too. I thought some of the kind of wackier comedy with her sidekick dude was a little slapsticky for me.
We know Dave doesn't like laughter.
That one was just pushing it. Like I want the Salem Seven need to be scary. By the way, they did look scary.
They did. Yeah.
But he was kind of like running around like good ghost.
It's
like
a Scooby-Doo.
That is fair. That is fair.
And that's all. I just wanted him to react more scared.
However, that is kind of in line with what the MCU is. So
well, also like Agatha's going to clearly have some humor to it.
Yes,
her interactions. She had sexy interactions, though, with Aubrey Plaza.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely kind of alluded to a relationship.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm showing you guys a picture of Salem 7, which is very much a cartoonish...
That is a Bronze Age team of villains, if ever I saw one.
That is not how they looked in the show.
No. They're much scarier.
In the show, they look like Silent Hill people.
Yes.
They're like creepy Silent Hill...
And they move in kind of like weird... like.
Yeah, bursts of speed and stuff.
But yeah, I went from being sort of like not sure I'm going to watch this even to kind of excited to see what the next episode looks like.
I really like Catherine Hahn.
Yeah, Catherine Hahn's great.
And so where it ends up is they're on the Witch's Road, and we don't know exactly what that will mean or what will be there, but it looks like they're in this otherworldly dark forest with probably magic shit in it.
And they're releasing these Wednesdays at 6?
I think that's right.
Which, they're not doing the midnight anymore, yeah. It's a little sad, but...
Okay, yeah. So maybe we'll compare notes next on week. Thursday, then.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about English Teacher over on Hulu, which is an FX show.
Yep.
This is set in Austin, Texas.
Yep.
I would bet it's not filmed in Austin, Texas.
Well, they definitely film some of it.
Every show they open, and they show them driving it down the middle of, like, Congress.
Yeah, and they have the Frost Bank and a couple of other
things. But I feel like that's, like, the rest of us is probably set.
Probably.
But this is set in Austin, Texas. It is a comedy. It is about a gay English teacher at a high school. And it starts off, it's got that sort of edgy thing that FX does, the sort of edgy comedy stuff, but it starts off that he is, like, being disciplined for having, kissing his boyfriend, who was also a teacher at the school. His boyfriend is a much more flamboyant gay man. He has been fired, quit.
He quit.
Just real quick question. This is not David E. Kelly show, right?
No, it's not.
It has a little bit of the sound of, what was his school show?
Boston Public?
Yeah, Boston Public was always engaging with current issues.
This definitely does not feel like Boston Public.
No, I just mean like, but you know that, like, that does sound like that.
Yeah, I guess it's definitely a totally different vibe, because I like Boston Public.
I had to look. Apart from a credit sequence shot in Austin, the show is actually filmed in Georgia.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no way this is filmed in Austin. Well, you know, our idiot governor got rid of all our film incentives. So.
That's true.
So this is created by and starring Brian Jordan Alvarez, who's this very sort of winning character. And he is sort of the, like, a little more conservative gay man.
Okay.
Like, he doesn't want to get, he's like, he doesn't want to have all these fights about, like, what's, you know, the gay victory and that kind of stuff. He just wants to, like, lay low and teach English.
He's not a super in-your-face activist guy.
One of his best friends, and frenemies, almost, I would say, is the coach.
Markey.
Coach Markey. Who is a little more of a right-wing, like, dude. But, like, in a very charming way, like, when Nick and I both, when I said to Nick before, when I was telling him, I was like, there are sort of weird centristy politics which are a little off-putting to me.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the point of the view of the show is, because they're definitely making fun of like, the LGBTQ club and how sort of, like, some kind of leftist stuff can be a little crazy sometimes.
Right, yeah.
They're definitely, like, making fun of that a little bit, like, the easily triggered and all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, it's like, it feels like they're trying to do, like, both sides are so wacky. And you know I hate that kind of shit.
Right.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it's mostly working for me here, partly because...
The moment writing is good.
The moment writing. His best pal, Gwen, who is, like, one of the other teachers.
Yes.
There's a great runner in episode 4 where the kids are, like, doing a list of the hottest teachers. She starts dressing hotter and hotter because she's not on the list.
Well, she's like
number 26 or something.
Hilarious.
And that pays off in a pretty fun way. The kids, like, the high school kids are pretty funny characters.
The drag queen episode was great.
The drag queen episode is great. They're doing a Powderpuff football thing, and they the LGBTQ club is like, this is insulting, you can't do it. And so the teacher basically brings in his old pal who's a drag queen, to teach the football players to do actual drag.
Well, yeah, he was like, so if the football players actually do real drag, is that okay? And they were like, I think that's cool.
And it's actually very charming. It's very funny, but it's also very charming.
It also doesn't hurt that the principal is played by
Enrico Colantani. Enrico Colantani, he is playing him as if a guy who's, like, just immune to any, or allergic to any kind of controversy, and just wishes that everyone would shut up and go home.
He just wants to sleep, and just be ignored.
That is relatable.
He is great. It's a lot of fun.
You know, it is fun. It is interesting. Comedy is sometimes how we talk about difficult stuff.
Yeah.
And I that sounds like, I agree with you, Randy. I wouldn't want something that's like, both sides.
Yeah.
Ultimately. But it's okay to laugh at yourself too, and to see the foibles even in your angle. You know, in the world of, I don't know if you know about this, but in the world of leftists, they eat each other alive.
What? No.
All the a million purity tests and stuff like that, and it is funny.
Well, the fourth episode actually deals with, like, school shootings and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I thought that was a fairly
it's got some stuff to say. It's really interesting. I don't love it, but I've liked every episode.
Yeah, agreed.
So remind me, where is this running?
This is on Hulu. It's an FX show.
Hulu, okay.
All right. I want to talk about Terminator Zero, but maybe save that till next week. Just want to say that we talked a little bit about the trailers for that.
The trailer looked a little samey. This is the Terminator anime.
Yeah, looked a little samey. I'll talk more about it next week, but basically, it's worth a watch.
Okay.
And in a similar vein, Dave, I know you and Nick is going to see this. You're going to wait to sort of talk about it more next week. But
I have seen Transformers 1, and I'm not going to say any specifics or spoilers about it, but I will say that I did enjoy it quite a bit. You know, that early kiddie kind of trailer, it's not like those scenes aren't in there, but I think it's like they highlighted most of the big kind of goofy scenes in the trailer.
Yeah.
There's a lot more serious stuff, and there's a bit of weight to the story that the trailer shows you about Optimus and Megatron having been friends at one point when they're younger days.
This is one of the better depictions of Megatron.
I absolutely. As easily, I mean, like, there's the iconic original Megatron, yeah. And then I say this is the most interesting as a character.
Yeah.
Good voice acting.
I'm glad to hear that.
And the one thing I messaged you about this, Nick, that I can mention that's not a spoiler, but is an incentive to see it. It is the best Cybertron I've ever seen.
Huh.
It is a very populated, very architecturally diverse and fascinating to look at. Always cool stuff happening. Like, it's a playground for the action adventure stuff. But, like, you know how they did that decent CG series at, like, three or four years ago or whatever on Netflix? But it still felt like there were, like, 12 people, 12 Autobots and 12 Decepticons on all of Cybertron.
Yeah.
You will literally see hundreds or thousands of Transformers going about their daily lives and jobs, and it really feels like a real populated place. And lots of personality to it. So if you don't mind it being a little bit Pixar-y, a little bit bigger in its humor than, you know, kind of all ages-y, there is also some really badass stuff here, cool action and all that stuff. So I am recommending it.
Cool, I'm excited.
And we'll, Nick, hopefully talk about it in more detail next week.
All right, that'll wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.